your mind to driving down this road a while. Arizona's caught me by surprise.
It's Andrew Peterson and Nothing to Say, the name of the song. And before that, we heard from Jennifer LaMountain. And before the throne of God above. 10 minutes after the hour, it's a Tuesday morning, and Dr. Don Clark joins us, Don, a biochemist. Do you have to register to be a biochemist, Don? Do you have to have a license to do that?
Oh, no. You just get a degree in the field.
Okay. So
just a lot of degrees.
That lets you put it on your business card then. Okay. Don, yeah, Don exactly. Clark, a biochemist and member of the Board of Creation Moments, and also one of the preeminent vintners, or is it Vigneron? Which one? Which is the right? Which is it? Vigneron?
Vintner is the winemaker, and the Vigneron is the vineyard manager.
Okay, well, he's both. He's got all those titles behind his name. And we talk to him just about every Tuesday morning. We talk about things like creation and faith and science and life we talk about. We're learning today, there's an article in The Behemoth, which is a Christianity Today kind of sponsored publication, and it's talking about Yellowstone. David, have you ever been to Yellowstone National Park?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I have. Okay. Yeah, many years ago as a Ute, mm-hmm. I was in Yellowstone. It's been a while.
You go take pictures of the bears and stuff?
I remember a bear coming up to the window looking for a marshmallow.
Yeah.
And I remember him putting his hand or his paw mm-hmm. on the side of the car. Now, either that actually happened or I've seen way too many movies.
Yeah, that could be
starts with the word grizzly.
Yeah.
But I, you know, so I gave him the whole bag and I said, okay, let's go now.
Okay. Well, you were probably smart to comply there. Don, have you mm-hmm. ever been there? Have you seen some of the wonders of Yellowstone National Park?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I've been there actually twice on vacation, two separate times with my family or part of my family. Mm-hmm. And it is definitely a wonder to see. One of the times that we went there, unfortunately, a couple of years earlier, they had that massive fire that was kind of ravaged the forest in and around Yellowstone.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's still a beautiful place, a place of wonder for sure to go to and to experience not only the beautiful scenery and the mystery of course Old Faithful and many other geysers that are there, but the wildlife, I mean the variety of wildlife that you can find there, in the herds of bison, I mean they're just multiplying and growing, probably getting close to when this country was first being explored, you know, all the bison that
bouncing
were,
back
that
there were around. There were millions of them. Yeah, in fact, they range as far east as Kentucky and probably Tennessee and the Carolinas had bison back in those days. So it's nice that they've got some a safe haven there at Yellowstone. But there's lots of other life in Yellowstone that you just kind of see signs of, and that's what this article is about. It's entitled "Life in the Cauldron." There's a link to the article in the chat window now at Broken Road Radio. If you'd like to peruse this article, it's a short one, it's a simple one, but it talks about some scientific goofs again. Science is kind of set a standard that this is what life looks like, and these are the conditions under which life can exist, and they keep being surprised. Don, are you familiar with Enceladus, the moon on Saturn? That's the next destination that science and NASA thinks they can find life in the universe. But lo and behold, they haven't even found all the life here yet. And they're discovering new kinds, and they're finding it in places where they said, well, there can't be life there. And they look closer, and they do some studies, and they say, oh, look at that. It moves. Tell us about that. There's some of those things here. Hot bugs and super proteins.
Yes. Well, these are bacteria, actually, that survive in some of the boiling water, not only in Yellowstone, but actually on the ocean floor, where there's, hot either hot lava coming up or hot water coming up from the deep. And of course Yellowstone is nothing but a big super volcano, and I don't know if one day it's going to explode again, but anyway, the obviously magma is pretty close to the Earth's surface there, and then the water you see down into those layers. And of course you know that Old Faithful is named that because it erupts every, I think it's 45 minutes or so, and it's pretty much on time. Mm-hmm. But folks have been surprised to find bacteria that survive. Actually, they survive in the water that's near underground. That's near the magma, and obviously that water is super hot. And they, you know, of course, when the geyser erupts, then those bacteria with the water with the bacteria in it, you know, comes out and kind of spews over the area where there, you know, there's a hole in the ground for the geyser, and they survive. They not only survive, obviously, in the hot boiling water, but they survive, you know, on the surface, and that's what gives all the beautiful colors around the thermal, you know, thermal activity. And
so they are not mineral deposits. They're not mineral deposits. It's those little bugs.
They are bacteria. They're photosynthetic bacteria, and they have different colors. Some of them are yellow, some of them are bright blue, some of them are orange, some of them are white, and so it creates these bacteria kind of, you know, migrate to the temperature that they like.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, you know, like it very, very hot, and they might be, you know, closer to the hole or to the thermal emission or something, yeah, fumaral.
But science has said they shouldn't be there. And I'm looking at a history in this article of scientists who have said, well, life can't exist above 131 degrees. That we did the tests and just it can't exist. And then as recently as 1963, a biophysicist named Ellis Kempner said, well, no life can exist above 163 degrees. They keep like raising the bar, and then they discover life that can and does thrive in those higher temperatures. This reminds me of an episode of Star Trek I saw years ago, where Captain Kirk and his crew beamed down to a planet, and their mission was to find life on this planet. And they looked around, and they looked around, and they had their adventures, but they could find no life. And so they said, beam us back up. There's no life here. And so they beamed them back up, and then the rocks down below held a conversation with each other. The life was rocks. They didn't recognize them, but they were being watched and talked about by these rocks all the time. How do we hope to find life on another planet when we can't recognize it here? What's the test?
You have to have a different, a different mindset, because these bacteria that survive in the very hot water are called thermophiles, thermal meaning hot, and phil meaning loving. So they love heat. We get so used to, okay, normal life looks like this, and proteins in normal life, for example, in the cells that make up the structural proteins of the cell, and the enzymes in the cell, and the globular proteins that carry things around. all of these, these types of proteins, they normally denature or unfold, if you will, and become useless at certain temperatures. And that, for us, for example, that temperature is not that high. So, when we get into uncomfortable temperatures, we things start to break down, and so it's been a surprise to see these bacteria and to find these bacteria. Not only do they not use oxygen for their electron transfer process and for their energy source, But I mean, that's why we breathe oxygen. We breathe oxygen, and oxygen eventually turns into carbon dioxide and turns into water. And electrons are being transferred. And then we use that energetic electrons, for example, to build things in our cells and in our systems. Well, these bacteria do the same thing, but they use sulfur instead. So sulfur-rich, water, they'll use the sulfur, transfer electrons and hydrogen. And the reason why, when you go to Yellowstone, it smells of rotten egg is that's because that's hydrogen sulfide that is being produced by these bacteria. So it's a different biochemical system. And the interesting thing is that these bacteria and these proteins that are in these bacteria, the enzymes that are in these bacteria, are heat stable. And some of them are heat stable in boiling water, which is a surprise, because most of the proteins that we know of, at least with in quote I'll say normal life, is those proteins would have long have denatured and broken down. The same with the DNA. I mean, the DNA is protected by these super proteins, if you will. So it doesn't break down. Of course, anything, bacteria, bacteria are entire, anything, even viruses have DNA or RNA. But, that's the information system in life. So you need to be able to protect that, and that needs to be able to be copied, for example, for these bacteria to multiply. Well, scientists are now using some of these proteins and enzymes. For example, there's a protein called an enzyme called DNA polymerase, which by its name, it copies DNA. That's the whole function of DNA polymerase. And so we are now using that in kind of DNA detective systems called PCR. It's most people know it by PCR, or it's a polymerase chain reaction. And what that does is you take a little bit of this heat stable enzyme, and you mix it with just one molecule of DNA. And this enzyme, and of course you put the nucleotides in there, and the DNA polymerase copies the DNA and makes millions of copies. And once you have millions of copies, then you can do whatever analysis you want to do on the mm-hmm. DNA. So it has these enzymes and proteins that we're finding in these thermophiles are we're finding them to be quite useful. So to look for life in unusual places, it does take a mindset that, hey, maybe it's not going to look the same as what we're used to. And hopefully now, I mean, if we look for life other places and on other worlds, if there is such a thing, then we'll have a kind of a different mindset that says, maybe life isn't going to look exactly, the same as what we're used to with most of life here on Earth. I mean, these bacteria and other life that's around, they're living in a different world, if you will, here on Earth, from the point of view that not only is it hot, but some of these fumaroles and things are very low pH. And some bacteria, for example, that converts the sulfur into, as I said, the hydrogen sulfide or the rotten egg smell, but other bacteria take that same sulfur and convert it into sulfuric acid. And yet, they still survive in sulfuric acid. Sulfuric acid is one of the more stronger acids mm-hmm. that we have. And these, you know, bacteria and proteins and enzymes in the DNA are all surviving in an environment that we would have said years ago, oh, that's just impossible.
Mm-hmm. And this seems to be part of the discovery of smaller and smaller and smaller things that's been preoccupying science for a long time. And I have a curious question for you. Life apparently can be too small to see with the naked eye, and so you have other tools that let you discover it and examine it and analyze it. Do you suppose life could be too big for us to see?
Oh, I'm not sure where you're going with
that. What if we as humans, we relate to each other in our flat land, we know two dimensions, and we zoom around, and we recognize each other as life, and we go about our business. But what if we're on the back of some super colossal giant, and we're a thread in his shirt? I mean, I'm kidding here, but just to illustrate the principle, the universe is a big place.
It is a big place.
How would we detect that?
That's an interesting concept. Actually, that concept was in a movie in the sequel to The Men in Black. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if you remember that science fiction
movie. Yeah, I do.
Movie.
As a matter of fact, I got a few chuckles out of that. Yeah.
But and in the second movie, the movie kind of ends with they are looking at their world. There's like this door that opens, and then the door, when you open the door, it's like they're in a little closet. The world that the men in black are living in are in a little closet, and it opens up into a huge world where there's big creatures and everything. We can imagine something like that, but I don't know if the Lord would God would create something like that. I mean, it's a world within a world within a world, you know, type of situation. Mm-hmm. It makes for
that's what we're seeing as we look smaller and smaller and smaller, and then we're kind of assuming we're at the top of the food chain. Maybe not. I mean, but there is a spiritual environment, and that has to be considered life too, does it not? That has to be the progenitor of life.
Sure, the spiritual environment came before the physical environment, mm-hmm. if you will. And how how big are the angels? If you're not in this world that has dimension to it, it's like, okay, does dimension even make any sense, mm-hmm. In the spiritual world? Now, obviously, there are spiritual beings, and we know of, several different types from the Bible. And we get glimpses from now and then of spiritual beings that, like the cherubim that were guarding the entrance to the garden, the Garden of Eden, and which seemed to be pretty big dudes swinging flaming swords to keep Adam and his family out, we don't know. I mean, unless we experience the spiritual side of things and actually one day, get there, does size really have any meaning anymore? Mm-hmm. Obviously, when we get to paradise and get to heaven and everything, we'll be able to recognize supposedly one another and recognize our spouses or our uncles and relatives. So we will at least have some form that resembles our form here on Earth. Hopefully, in a much younger bodies. Mm-hmm. But what that dimensionally will be is. Probably at this point, anybody's guess. But
I think it's safe to say that we were created as special creatures in God's eye to relate to Him, to be in relationship with Him. And maybe that gives us special status among all the different kinds of life that He has created in all the different places that He has created it. And do you know of anything in the Bible that would prohibit or refute the idea that there could be life of some kind out there, physical life out there someplace in the universe on some other planet or some part of this planet where we've never been? We're discovering that here.
Oh, on this on this planet for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not out of the question. On other planets, to have, I guess the question is, it's not necessarily life. I mean, because, you know, bacteria or a virus or something of that nature, you know, we may find that exists on another planet. Mm-hmm. But intelligent life, I find that highly unlikely from a spiritual point of view. Mm-hmm. And here's why. If, you know, God obviously created us in his own image, and he created us in such a way that we can have relationship with him. Well, when he created us here on earth, he knew at the time that he was creating us that he would have to send his son to come to earth and to die for our sins. Now, the question becomes, how many times does Jesus have to die? And if you have life on another planet, and if you have intelligent life and beings that are also created in God's image there, they would have probably experienced the same thing that we experienced. That is, they fell out of grace, they disobeyed God, and then a Savior would have had to been sent, and Jesus would have had to go to that planet and die for their sins as well.
Unless, of course, they were not made for the same purpose we were. They may serve some other function entirely, and that's up to our imagination. One of our listeners, SAS, is asking questions here. He says, I don't know if there's anything in Genesis or in Scripture that precludes God making another world somewhere. Not really sure about that. If so, we have to ask if we have a need to know what God does not tell us about. Maybe it's just not important to us. Yeah, if he hasn't said, well, but there's a hint, he says. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Kind of implies our need to know, he writes.
Mm. Yeah, well, that is a very interesting question. I like I said, I'm kind of, you know, I'm of a, you know, proponent of saying that Jesus only died once, and he made this planet special, and there's a lot of reasons for that, and life of other, you know, of other things, it would be, what would be the purpose? Because when God created the earth, for example, he created it in such a way that the fish and the birds and the animals were all created for us. And he gave basically Adam and then, you know, Eve, the you know, the command to say, be fruitful and multiply, and of course, take care of everything, be a manager of this place. And of course, you know, we know the fall came in chapter 3 of Genesis, and things changed, and then they actually changed hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, the deed, if you will, to this earth was then taken by the enemy of our soul. So, to say that, okay, there's might be some type of life on another planet far, far in the galaxy, you know, you'd have to ask the philosophical question, what's the point, from a theological question, if we are... you know, created in such a way, like I said before, created in the image of God and to be ultimately managers of the things that he created for us here on earth. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time, you know, visualizing that or even, you know, thinking that would be a possibility. But, you know, mm-hmm. anything is certainly... you know, it's certainly possible. I just don't, you know, think from a theological point of view, it fits the model that you know, we fell from grace and God had to deliver us from our sins, if you will, by sending the ultimate sacrifice, who is, of course, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm.
And kind of a related question in my mind, if we don't have a need to know those things, are we permitted to know those things? That would make us even freer agents, philosophically again, than I would expect. SAS comments here. I says, I'm a big believer in the concept of dimensions. For example, the Lord's Prayer, apparently in original intent, says, Thy will be done in earth as in heaven. If we're talking about in earth, he thinks that implies a dimension, more than a place. That's pretty philosophical right there. So existing in other dimensions, perhaps. And do we have a need to know? I guess we don't know until we discover it. And maybe we're not allowed to if it would be harmful or if it's simply a waste of our time.
And God gave us the ability to create and to wonder and to think and to build build spaceships. We can now go out in space. Now, can we go thousands and thousands of light years away? Well, we don't quite have that capability yet. Will it be possible one day? Well, I think man's evil is going to overtake him, and so we probably won't get there. But it's clear that this world that we live in is multidimensional, and it's more than just the four dimensions, length, width, height, and time. There's more dimensions to it, and are there 12 dimensions? Most physicists, for example, today think that there's 10 dimensions. Mm-hmm. to this universe. Perhaps there's actually 12. And I think on one of the other programs we talked about multidimensional space, and we talked about flat land and how to get a handle of this. What we do know, at least from Scripture, is that the spiritual world is really is more real than this physical world.
Mm-hmm.
So being a dweller in this physical world and living in this physical world, that's not our ultimate goal. I mean, that's
we're fish out of water.
We are. I mean, we are just sojourners, if mm-hmm. you will. This is just a temporary quarters, for us per se. I mean, it was supposed to be more permanent, but in the fall of man, now the Lord is going to have to remake the heavens and the earth, so that we can have a place to dwell in, for all eternity. Mm-hmm. But yet, that's far off in the future. Now, of course, there's going to be this millennial period, this thousand-year period, where we're going to dwell here on earth, and it will be remade a little bit, perhaps back to the place before the fall and before the flood. But it appears we'll
recognize it. We'll be able to function in it. We'll probably breathe oxygen and walk around on two legs like we do now. Maybe with added abilities, but yeah.
I mean, but that is during the millennial period. But after the millennial period, it's a spiritual world mm-hmm. from that point on. Mm-hmm.
SAS brings up an interesting point here, too, and he brings up the tree of the knowledge of right and wrong again in the garden. Are we allowed to know? What is the downside of knowing? And he gives us an example, the Tower of Babel, he reminds us. It was man pushing the limits.
Well, man was taking on the character of that father, which was the mm-hmm. character of Satan. Mm-hmm. In that it wasn't necessarily the search for knowledge per se, but that man, in this case Nimrod, wanted to be God.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Tower of Babel is reaching up into the heavens in order so that this one mighty hunter who was not only a mighty physical hunter of animals, but he was a hunter of men to turn the hearts of men away from God and towards him, which is exactly what Satan wants. Mm-hmm. You know, Satan wants us to worship him. So here, the Tower of Babel, and that whole Babylonian religious system is to get man to worship the enemy of our soul, whom one of his titles is Satan. It's the red dragon. It's the deceiver. It's the great liar. Mm-hmm. whichever title you want to use, it is a spiritual being, and his whole desire is to have all of creation worship him instead of worship God.
Mm-hmm. But that does suggest and make plain, perhaps, that God will keep us on the road. He will not allow us to be destroyed outside of his plan. So if we were to discover a race of giants on another planet that want to come and eat us, it wouldn't happen, because it would be contrary to what we know to be God's plan, at least the extent to which we know it.
Well, that's... And actually, that already happened on Earth. And you might say, okay, Don, where did that happen? Well, that already happened on Earth and was part of the reason for the flood, because the angels left their natural habitat and saw that the daughters of man were attractive and took for themselves daughters of men and created something that God did not intend for them to create, a kind of a super race, if you will. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason for the flood was to wipe out the super race.
The Nephilim.
So that has already happened on Earth, and God took the souls of not only the product of the Nephilim themselves, the product of this unholy union, if you will, and put them in a very special place called the Bottomless Pit, which is, I believe, in the center of this earth. And that pit will be opened, of course, during the tribulation period. It will be open, and you've got these weird creatures that are called locusts or locust-like that have tails that sting, and they torment man for five months here on Earth.
So, from Revelation, then you consider that to be literal and not figurative.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, the description, we don't know what these creatures or beings are going to be like, but we do know that they sting anyone that does not have the mark of God mm-hmm. on them. So it's the 144,000...
The remnant,
Jewish, yeah. Men, but it's also the saints. It's also those that proclaim that Jesus is Lord. They are also marked, but everybody else gets stung repeatedly, mm-hmm. and so much that they would say, just let me die, just let mm-hmm. me die. But they don't die, because God doesn't allow it, and it's part of the his plan to try to bring people to their senses, if you will. But it's the culmination of the sins kind of the world being dealt with, and it's Satan himself that God gives the key to, mm-hmm. the bottomless pit, and he goes down and opens the pit and all of these creatures come out. So we've had very strange things happen on Earth that weren't really supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm. And now, getting back to our topic today, they're discovering life in places where they said, no, there can't be life there, not no way, no how. And yet, there is. And who knows, maybe they'll find something similar on another planet, maybe Enceladus, that Saturn moon they're going to be exploring before long. Dr. Don Clark, again, a biochemist and a member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to recommend to you a trip to the Creation Moments website. It's at creationmoments.com. com. It's a commercial site, so you'll find resources there, DVDs and articles and books and all kinds of things that represent the scientific approach to the explanation, the scientific explanation of young Earth creationism. And I think you'll find it very persuasive. And you owe it to yourself, if this matter is of interest to you, to take a look at that side of the argument and see what you think. CreationMoments.com. You can link to them from our website at BrokenRoadRadio.com. Don, as always, we're grateful for your time and your expertise. It was great to have you by today. And have a good week down there in Texas. Hope the grape ranch is just rolling along there. And
well, we hope to pick our last field this week, and mm-hmm. We're getting some Cabernet Sauvignon grapes today to process from another vineyard. Mm-hmm. So we'll have quite a number of variety of wine to offer next year.
That'd be a good title for a book or a movie, The Last Fields. I think I go see that just based on the title itself. Don, take care. Have a good week. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye. See you, Don.
Go long.